morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Managed to survive getting in today. My ex-Terra, for the first time in 11 years, didn't want to start, Mike.
Well, you know, that's how it is. When you live so close to the station, you could roll down here anytime.
I pushed the car all the way here, Mike. I pushed it.
Today we're talking
about... I seem out of breath, Mike.
That was a very Vince Lombardi thing to do. We are doing, we are pronouncing names correctly today. Mike Cosentino is on this microphone.
Cosentino.
And we have some outstanding international guests this morning. We have an international audience. We have international guests who are going to tell us everything we've ever wanted to know and maybe more about the Democratic candidates. You know how it's getting,
3,500 of them.
It's getting, but it's great. And we're going to talk about, if we ever let them talk, whether this is good or bad for the party. Klaus.
Okay, good morning. This is Klaus von Stodderheim. And I'm here with my friend Daniel Singel, who's my oldest friend from when I went to prep school as an exchange student in 1961-62. Dan studied history at Harvard and has a PhD, published a number of books and working on another one. He taught at Hobart and Williams. It's a college in upstate New York. He's now retired. And he's been involved in politics, Democratic politics, deeply all his life, and he's going to go through the major announced and some unannounced Democratic candidates and tell us how they're likely to do. Dan?
First, thank you so much for inviting me. It's great to be here. It's also great to be talking about Democratic candidates for president get rid of Donald Trump.
Yes.
It's a wonderful, the light is shining. But at the same time, I'm a little bit fearful. I'd like to register that. I worry about the fact that so much is at stake. If we do not choose the right candidate, there's a very real possibility of 4 more years of Trump, which is the ultimate nightmare.
Well, that's it. And since we're identifying ethnicity, I have a Jewish friend who calls me almost daily and is so afraid the Democrats are going to screw it up.
Right, and that's my fear.
It's theirs to lose.
That I think has to be the way we approach this discussion. The House also is important. We want to not only hold our gains, we want to increase them in 2020.
I think in summary, what we really need for things to change is a major victory where we keep the House, we take the Senate, and we take the presidency. We need the whole shebang, because if we don't have it, we're going to have stalemate for another 4 years starting in 2020.
And we're not going to be able to reverse what Trump did, which is so crucial.
And the key to that, as Dan will explain to us, is electability.
Yep.
All right, well, I tell you how this works, folks, is that you have such a large group of candidates and you have so many different ideas, and I think that Mike and I have heard a lot of different ideas. Some people, you know, like Dan here, think it's a matter of electability. Other people think it's a matter of running somebody who you agree with or just who you think is the best candidate. So right now everything is up in the air, and I don't think we know who's the best candidate, right? We have to see how the race develops.
Yes, they'll be tested in the primaries, and that's how we will ultimately know. Although, again, they're going to be tested in the Democratic primaries, and what we have to keep our eye on is how they will do in the general election against Trump.
So you're going to talk about the leading candidates. I looked at, I think it was Wikipedia had 35 possible candidates. Another site had 15 candidates. So what order are we going to take them in, are we going to talk about them
Working out of an analysis that the Washington Post has been doing. They've been running a series using data as much as possible to determine who would appear to be the most electable coming into the campaign. And so I'd like to go over the candidates I think are the most electable, make a few really quick comments on a couple of others, and I'm not going to talk about all 35.
No.
We just don't have time.
We would need big lists pasted on the walls here.
It would confuse the listeners to do that.
Although our listeners are very smart.
Oh, I'm sure of that, but I have trouble keeping track of them all. In any event, the Post did an analysis based on how well these candidates have done in previous elections relative to how well Trump and Clinton ran in their states. So the difficulty of getting elected in their states for a Democrat versus how well they did. And they ended up saying, determining that Amy Klobuchar would be what they call the queen of electability. On this basis, because if you think about it, Clinton won Minnesota by 1.5 points. Klobuchar won re-election last year by 24 points.
Wow.
And she had strong support all through the states, not only the cities, but the rural areas, small towns. She carried everything. She's very experienced, very well respected in Congress by everyone except her staff.
And that's,
you know,
what's coming
that,
out
that's
now,
been an
it?
Issue. I'm not sure how important
her,
it
her
is.
Her mistreatment of the staff is now a running issue. There's been articles in all the different newspapers.
It'll go
and
away.
Stuff.
It's,
but
it's,
I think,
it's
I think
silly,
it will. I think you're absolutely right, Mike.
It's silly, stupid, and yep. Besides that, not important.
And she's identified as a moderate, but in fact, she is solid on almost all the basic Democratic issues. If she is elected, she will be a Democratic president, not a conservative by any means. So she's very appealing. The other one they find likely to be electable on this basis is Beto O'Rourke, who did awfully well. I mean, came within 3.5% of beating Ted Cruz in Texas. That was pretty striking.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. And I unsubscribed from an awful lot of the Democratic because I had just my box of email just got filling up. But I kept Beto's stuff on because he wasn't sending out any messages. I don't know about you, but I just got 3 letters from him, emails from him, which makes me think he might be deciding to run. He's a very different candidate. I will say that he's a very different kind of person. He actually writes interesting stuff, you know. In other words, his description of traveling and sort of campaigning is actually exciting and interesting compared to most of the candidates. So I don't know what his chances are. What do you think his chances are in a general election?
I think his chances probably are good. The Post said he does well in appealing, for example, to different constituencies in Texas. So that might translate pretty well nationally. On the other hand, he is very inexperienced relative to the others.
Beto should stay in Texas.
That's what I think he's going to do. I'm not sure he's running.
Next.
He's running for the Senate, I think. He's running against John Corwin. And he wants us to support him.
But I'm just suspicious when I get suddenly I'm getting all these emails from a potential candidate, and they're all very nice, but I wasn't getting them for a long time, and now suddenly I'm getting them, and must have been on that list for a while. So I think there's a shift to being interested running for president. Whether he's going to run, I have no idea, but there's an interest there. And of course he is extremely charismatic. And if Klobuchar is a mainstream, solid, electable run again and again candidate, he's a charismatic candidate. He's mm-hmm. a different kind of person. He's much more, I guess you'd call it artistic and much more intuitive. He's able to connect up with people and so forth and so on. But as you say, he has almost no experience.
He will do extremely well, I would think, with the millennial vote.
Beto should stay in Texas.
But I have a feeling, he's going back and forth, I have a feeling he's going to be running against John Corwin in 2020. But if he runs, then I think he's a real contender. He's someone to keep an eye on.
It certainly would bring some excitement to the race. Yes. And, you know, go ahead.
Next in line, according to the Post, is Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, who won re-election in a tough year in Ohio last year. It was good nationally for Democrats, but they did very poorly in Ohio as a rule. They lost the governorship, lieutenant governor, and so on. And he managed to win by 7 percentage points. He's won consistently. He's very close to labor unions. He is probably the most elected.
What are those? Do those still exist?
Ohio.
They supply a lot of work, workers.
I'm obviously teasing.
Yeah.
We want to remind listeners on Democratic perspective that we're talking about electability this morning. Our guest.
Exactly.
Exactly. And so, and that's Sherrod Brown. Is because he's from Ohio makes
yes
sense. Okay.
So he's from Ohio, she's Klobuchar is from Michigan. These are essential essential states to win.
Right.
But has he declared? I don't think he's declared to run.
That he's spending all this time in Iowa, New Hampshire. He's been in South Carolina.
This is a great time to visit Iowa. the snowpack and all that.
Yeah. So I have a feeling that he is going to run. I'll be very surprised. They usually say they have to worry about their families. Well, his wife really wants him to run. So
get him out of the house or
well, no, she's a political reporter. She loves politics. She's a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter. And and a very avid progressive Democrat. I have a feeling he's probably the most electable progressive in the race. Someone who's real solid and is terrific on issues involving inequality.
Yes.
Economic inequality. He's probably the best candidate.
I've sent money to Sherrod. That's
yes.
That's how important he is
yes.
in my life. But
yes.
But I do worry on a national basis.
It's a real question mark as to how he will translate nationally. The thing he has going for him is his authenticity.
Mm.
He's
yes.
a very straightforward candidate, not much charisma. But nonetheless, he comes across as somebody honest, trustworthy, someone you might really want to have in the White House. So I think he could appeal to younger voters on that basis. They like Bernie because back in 2016 because he was authentic. And Sherrod Brown could have the same kind of reach to them.
Are you going in order or can we get to Bernie now?
Yeah, let's do Bernie now.
I would like to go to Bernie later.
Okay.
I'm going in order of electability. So Bernie's down the list for me. The next one, again, according to the Post.
Yes, sir.
Cory Booker. He's very appealing. Solid background. He did a wonderful job as mayor of Newark. Most people agree on that. Rhodes Scholar. Varsity football player, Division I school, Stanford. That will
That's a
appeal
big deal.
To,
a lot of people forget that.
Yes, to male voters.
Yeah.
He is a golden-tongued orator. And again, he will appeal to younger voters. He appeals to women. I think he could have a very broad reach.
Yeah, I was living back east when he became mayor of Newark, and Newark is one of the worst-run cities in the United States, and he took over, and he was very hands-on. I mean, he's a guy who got out in his shirt sleeves and walked the precincts and talked to people and reorganized things and did stuff to improve people's housing. He did an outstanding job in Newark, and I think everybody thinks that whether you're Republican or Democrat back
yes,
east.
Yes, exactly. And he made it a point to live in a public housing project.
Right.
While he was mayor, which I think tells you something about him. There have been concerns about, is he not married? I think that would be okay. He's dating like crazy, so he'll be fine.
Or in this day and age, that's a bit dangerous, you know.
Well, yes, it could be. Could be. Next, the Post doesn't really know how to rate her, but I think Kamala Harris has to be at the same level as Cory Booker in terms of electability. She's extremely likable. She has a very interesting ethnic background that cuts across different groups. She's articulate.
This is my personal favorite right here.
Yeah. Well, I can see why you might think that. The thing I worry about is her depth. She's been a prosecutor all her career. She just got to the Senate. When she talks about issues, to me anyway, she does not seem to have the kind of extent of knowledge you would want in a presidential candidate.
Yeah, like we got now.
Well, much compared to what we have now, she's,
she's a great deal.
But I would worry that at news conferences, if, you know, as time goes on, in debates, she may come across as weaker than you would like on that count. So that's my one worry with her. The question becomes then, how fast can she learn?
So on the question of electability, I was reminding myself as much as anybody else. So we got Amy, Beto, Sherrod, Cory, and Kamala in the top five here. Now, the New York Times, and not to argue with the Washington mm-hmm. Post, I believe their measure of electability is how much money you can raise. Kamala raised $1.6 million first day. Bernie, who we haven't gotten to yet, but we will get to,
yes,
raised $4.5 million, according to the Times, the first day. If money equals electability.
But money hasn't been equaling electability.
Good. Tell us about that.
Well, if you look back 2016, look at some of those Republican candidates who had tons of money running against Trump, and they got nowhere. I think money is very helpful. It's great to have it, but I don't think it really, I think the ultimate question is, how does the candidate relate to voters?
Well, let me wrap that up. Yeah. When the media says money is electability, it's an easy thing for them to do.
Yes,
say,
exactly.
Boom, here's a number. Here's a factoid I can point to.
I sort of agree with that. I mean, it's an easy measurement of popularity is the amount of money you're able to raise, particularly this early in the campaign. Kamala Harris had a hugely popular and large rollout of her campaign. She had a whole lot of people there. What, 5,000 people or something mm-hmm. showed up? So she's shown that she can generate a lot of support in California. And we have to see how she does once she gets out and starts campaigning.
California will be important because it's coming up early in March this year.
When's the first primary? Do you know offhand?
The first one is mid-February is Iowa,
yeah,
I think, and then followed, of course, by New Hampshire.
Of course.
And then South Carolina, and then you get your Super Tuesday. And I think California's thrown in to Super Tuesday this year. So that will help her a lot, I think.
Who's next?
Next on the list is a curveball.
A curveball.
Every year, every election, you get a sleeper.
Okay.
Candidate whom no one is expecting to emerge as important, but who nonetheless does and ends up in double digits in Iowa, New Hampshire, develops a following. And my choice for that sleeper candidate would be, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Pete Buttigieg. The mayor of South Bend, Indiana.
I got the name right, too. Good for you.
Well, how do you pronounce his name again?
Pete Buttigieg.
Okay.
Buttigieg.
Can somebody get elected with a name that most Okies can't pronounce? That's my question.
They call him Mayor Pete, right? Because nobody's
that's true. That's right.
Right. He calls himself Mayor Pete. But he has so much going for him. The main thing he has going is his communication skills, which are the best in the pack. He has an incredible knack for taking complicated issues and expressing them in terms that everyone can understand. And in politics, that's gold, I think. He's young. He's 37. He is going to really appeal to younger voters.
Where is he on the progressive traditional?
He's sort of in the middle
scale.
With Booker and Harris, about the same place. He is an Afghan war veteran. He's gay and very proud of it. He's a Rhodes Scholar. And he has done, if Cory Booker has done a great job in Newark, he's done a great job in reviving South Bend. Everyone agrees there. When he ran for re-election in this relatively conservative Indiana, corner of Indiana, even though, again, he was both gay and married to a man, he got 80% of the vote.
Wow.
So that tells you a little bit about him.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's going to be your Democratic nominee. I'm not predicting that. I'm predicting that he'll emerge as a contender in this race, someone to keep an eye on, and a possible running mate for, say, someone like Kamala Harris. Might be an interesting choice for her, particularly because he would be such a good speaker and someone who could go out and whip up votes. So he's my sleeper candidate. Then we have to include Kristen Gillibrand, my senator in New York State. I think she will be appealing to women voters because she's a very ardent feminist. But I think she's limited to that.
You know what I'm going to say here.
Go ahead.
The
elitist.
The L. Franken. Yeah, well, the L. Franken affair. Just,
yep.
And I'm looking all over social media. I'm looking at Reddit and Facebook and seeing Kirsten.
Yeah.
Thank you. Doing long explanations of why she did what she did to L. Franken and starting this campaign on sexual harassment.
I saw her defense. I think you posted it, right?
Yes, I did.
And it was kind of extreme and over the top.
And I said, doesn't matter. you know, go back, be a nice senator. New York needs you. Stay out of the presidential race because I think this will never go away. This will not go away.
But I agree totally there, Mike. But in addition, I would say, she will have very limited appeal to men.
You know, she was a conservative representative, right? She was a conservative Democrat from upstate New York originally, right?
Yes.
And now she's moved way toward the middle and picked up women's issues.
I think she's actually more in the progressive side, actually.
Yeah, I think she's moved there. But she started out, when she first ran, people in New York were saying, wow, she's really awfully conservative.
And she's having problems defending that, too. That's been a concern for her. But having observed her up close, I think women candidates who care about women's issues, Kamala Harris would be an example, are fine, but they have to also include the whole spectrum of issues. And I see Kirsten as someone who's very limited in her outlook. So I would put her far down the list. Really? I think she should go back to being a senator.
The comments were fascinating, and that's why I posted it. I encourage people to read the comments, and that was basically what I, once again, agreed with. She screwed up.
Yes.
She really screwed up when she did the Franken thing, and it's going to cost her this run for the presidency.
And silent Gary LeMaster is making thumbs down motions on her. So if she doesn't have Gary's vote, she's in trouble.
That's it.
She's finished.
That's right.
Then, sort of eighth on my list, I would put Bernie.
Okay.
And that might be a surprise. But I think, he had two big constituencies.
Wait a minute. Now, Dan, you mean think a 77-year-old Jew in America can't get elected president?
Well, it's because he's a socialist. The other...
Socialist Jew. I forgot about
right.
Oh,
that's his problem. No.
We can't vote for him then, right, Mike?
He is so amazingly popular among the people under 40 that I talk to, the three or four of them.
And also, Mike, I think people not involved in politics really liked Bernie. People who didn't, people in the Democratic Party were frustrated with his supporters because they kind of rampaged around. But there are a lot of them. The positive side of that is he brought a lot of people into campaigns, into politics who hadn't been involved before. And, of course, they kick over the furniture a bit in the process. I think that do you have someone else, Dan, who would be as good at bringing in traditional, unenthusiastic, non-voting folks?
That's the whole point, I think. Bernie made a great contribution in 2016 along those lines, also in raising really important issues that have now become mainstream issues.
True.
Like college for free and Medicare for all, although his version of Medicare for all is a disaster. I mean, what you want to do is scale up Medicare. And the system that we have now, it's a democratic program that was perfected over 50 years. Why would you start from scratch with it? But
I think that's an important point, Dan. Folks, when you hear people talking about Medicare for all, you're talking about a lot of different varieties and a lot of different ideas. And there's a whole bunch of technical issues that have to be worked out for this to work.
Right.
I'm not against it or how you want to frame it, but there's a lot of different variations, and from Bernie's to
what
a lot
Bernie
of other
did
folks.
Was rely on a assistant professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts, asked him, "Will you draw up a Medicare for all plan for me?" And this guy did it. And it was just a short draft, and Bernie said, okay, I'm going to run with this. He didn't send it to anybody else, didn't look for further expertise. And it's so bad that the economist who drew it up has disowned it.
That's a disappointing history.
And, yeah.
I've read Bernie's plan back in 2016, and what do I know? It sounded good, but it also sounded different. So we got five men and three women.
Well,
and
let me just want one more thing
more
about Bernie, and that is, I think he has two main constituencies, labor and the youth vote. Certainly was critical for him. If Sherrod Brown wins, he's going to take labor. There's just no question. If Beto, if Cory Booker, and if Pete Buttigieg do well in this race, and I would expect all three of them would, I would imagine they're going to have the youth vote.
Well, there's a bunch of really fanatic Bernie bros, as some of us call them, who, you know, the name Bernie comes up, their eyes light up, and, you know, for them the discussion has ended. So I wonder to what extent somebody can really effectively convince them to consider somebody else. I mean, the ones that I'm thinking of would not.
I want to interject just one thing, folks, is that because of what happened in 2016, where there was a bias against Bernie, there are now going to be a lot of Democratic debates. You see, I don't remember, Dan, whether it's 10 or 12, but you're going to see the candidates debating over and over again. And you have, 15 declared candidates? So it's a complicated issue, folks, how they're going to split it apart,
Right. Whether
it's based on your polling, so forth and so on. But there are going to be a lot of Democratic debates. You're going to get a chance to see all these candidates together.
And in 2016, Bernie was basically up against Hillary Clinton, who was a good technical debater, but she wasn't that likable, to be frank. I mean, she did not appeal to voters on a visceral level in the way that...
Yeah. She seems so artificial.
Yes,
I know people who know her personally, and she's a wonderful person, and she's warm, and she's very funny and all of this personally, but when she struck me, Dan, as someone who decided they couldn't quite be themselves and run for president, that everything had to be carefully done. Now, part of that is that she's been under scrutiny and attacked by the Republicans for God knows how long, Klaus. What do you think?
Yeah, no, right. I mean, they've done a complete hatchet job on her, same way that they did on the speaker.
But she's someone without a lot of political skill. she really does not have. Look at the terrible way she handled the email controversy. Yeah. A really skillful political leader would have been able to put that to bed very quickly.
Bill Clinton had the talent for politics.
Right.
You may disagree with the stuff he did, and I think most Democrats and Republicans disagree with a lot of what Bill Clinton did when he was president. No, I'm not talking about the scandal, but I'm just talking about policies. But he had a talent for reaching people that he developed. He just had a natural ability to reach people, and he got a lot of votes from conservatives and moderates and people in very odd places. She is a much more – there are people who have a kind of genius intelligence in politics, just like there are good professors
exactly,
and so forth.
Exactly.
And she was a hardworking, dedicated, focused, but she lacked that. The talent.
The political touch.
She didn't have a political touch.
And so Bobby Kennedy had.
Yes.
Who does?
Bernie was up against her. But now, in 2020, he's going to be up against some really talented.
Who are as left-wing as he is, or
as progressive as he is. Yeah.
Or close.
So I don't, yes, the Bernie bros will stay with him. But what percentage of the election will they represent in the end when his youth vote leaves him, when his labor vote leaves him? I'm not sure they're going to be large enough to make a difference.
What else do you have on your list?
Well, we can't omit Elizabeth Warren, whom the Washington Post puts at minus electability. They think she is the least electable.
Why?
Because she didn't do well in Massachusetts. A very blue state where Clinton, of course, just had no problems at all. She did not win re-election by that large a margin last time. And if she can't do well in her home state of Massachusetts, how will she do on a national basis?
I have T-shirts in my drawer with Elizabeth Warren quotes on them, sent to me by my daughter. Still, she persisted, by the way, is the quote, and she has one with the entire quote. Mm-hmm. I'm agreeing with you, yet I'm just throwing that in, that there's something about Elizabeth Warren that certainly appeals.
I find her appealing.
In this in this broad list of candidates we're going over, I'm a minus electability is a little mean, but I understand your reasoning, or the Post reasoning, and it makes sense.
Right. My contention this morning is we really have to pay attention to electability because the stakes are so high. And if that's the case, I would not want to put my bet on Elizabeth Warren, even though I really like some of the things she's saying.
Good. Yeah.
She's been consistent. She's been brave in coming up with these things. She was, I believe, the only professor at Harvard, or at least in the economics and the social sciences, who didn't have an Ivy League degree.
Right.
She made it from being, I mean, I'm from Oklahoma City originally, and she made it from being poor in Oklahoma City, which is like no joke, and a family barely scraping together, and she made it all the way.
Oh, she's impressive.
So she has a great deal of talent.
But she's a risk for us at this point. That would be my contention.
Well, let's make sure we get them all in, guys.
Let's not too many more. Joe Biden, I'm going to go over real quickly. I don't think he has a chance.
Yes, it crushes me to say this, but everybody tells me that, and everybody, you know, young, old, and I have a picture on my wall with me and Joe shaking hands.
I do, too.
In the basement of the Wyndham Hotel in Phoenix, by the way. Sheriff Arpaio was 10 feet away, and we won't talk about that. But the point is, Joe and I told each other jokes, made each other laugh, and it's time to.
He's
77 years old.
Yeah, 78 when he runs, and I'm not positive he's going to run. We'll see, but he's still a question mark. Then I would move to the governor of Montana, Steve Bullock, and here I would defer to Klaus.
Well, Steve is certainly not well known, but he's an interesting person and could be a dark horse. He has a wonderful, engaging personality. He's youthful. He's got a great sense of humor, and he's actually accomplished a whole bunch of things in a state with a Republican legislature. He got Medicaid expansion through. He got through what's called the Disclose Act, which is the toughest campaign finance law in the country that was recently upheld by the Ninth Circuit and the Supreme Court. We all thought would strike it down, but they refused to rule on it, so it remains the law. He's been a strong advocate of public lands, and he's popular in a state that's really very red. But he won re-election while all the rest of the statewide offices went to Republicans. So he has appealed to crossover vote, but he hasn't announced yet. But he might still surprise people, and you know, who knows where he ends up? He could end up as vice president, perhaps, or certainly. My theory is always there's no such thing as a lost election. His name, you know, will not be as obscure by the time this is over as it is right now.
Secretary of the Interior.
That would be good. Another one from Montana, and this time a good one.
Right.
There are going to be all these debates, folks. And you should listen to the debates. And I'm terrible at listening to debates. I tend to avoid them.
Really? Why?
Yeah, I don't know. I just get bored. But I think this year, the debates and the campaigns, you're going to have to watch who does what. Mm-hmm. Some of these candidates may not be as good as Dan thinks. Some of them may be better. We don't know until we see them. It's like, it's unfortunately American politics, and I guess all politics, a bit of a horse race. It's a bit of a popularity contest. It's not just about ideas. Who else do you have, Dan, on your list?
Well, at this point, the only one I would particularly include would be Michael Bloomberg, and how much are you going to say about him? I think he's too conservative to get very many votes in a Democratic primary. He was another very good mayor, but there are many questionable things about his handling of city issues. I just don't see him emerging as important. I'm not sure he's going to run.
Anyone else, Dan, that you think might emerge? I know it's hard to predict this early in the...
Klaus will add one more.
There's Howard Schultz, right, who could really screw things up very badly for us. But last time I talked to Dan, he thought that he wasn't going to run.
He's going to run as an independent if he runs at all.
Right.
So I don't think he's in the Democratic pack. I think all the rest of the Democratic candidates are minor figures who have very little chance.
Name a couple of them.
Julian Castro.
Julian Castro would be one. That was the one I was about to mention. But he's just doesn't have much personality. And he's contending against Cory Booker or Beto, I don't think he's getting anywhere.
Okay.
There's Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah.
I think she goes nowhere. I mean, her credentials are as a kind of Bernie sister. But
she also spends a lot of time stabbing fellow Democrats in various body parts.
Let's see.
Well, we're at least as far as what we consider the front-running candidates, we're at 9-4, nine men, four women. Which I think is important, and that's one thing we love about the Democratic Party is what a diverse field.
Absolutely, about as diverse as you can possibly imagine.
Right,
all over the country, all different ethnic groups, all different races,
sexual preferences,
ages. Yep. I mean, you've got it all there.
Yes, it's impressive.
That's the.
But the question that Dan's asking is what is electability in your sense? I know how you say that, I was the Post figured this out, but what do you think?
I think it's a candidate who inspires trust, confidence, and likability in voters, particularly swing voters. Also a candidate who can appeal to multiple constituents.
Exactly.
Not just someone on one issue who will do well with one particular cohort in the electorate, but someone who can, on the one hand, appeal to some of these marginal Trump voters, non-college-educated working class in the Midwest, and who can also appeal to minority voters, who can appeal to college-educated women. I mean, there's a coalition that needs to be put together here.
It sounds to me like you're describing Beto O'Rourke here, because he's,
got all of those things. That's a whole new can of worms. You are definitely going to want to save and nowhere to find this edition of Democratic Perspective, because after Trump's lawyer, Cohen's, I'm not going to call it testimony, because we'll call it speech in the House over starting February 27th, which is, what, Friday? Thursday?
Wednesday. Yeah.
Wednesday, we got the Trump lawyer speaking his about. So I think it's going to be a different ball game for Democratic candidates, and it's going to be a different ball game for Trump supporters in those places where he's 50%, and those places where he's 36%, I think we're going to see the 36% dip into the 20s, which is where he belongs. And we're going to see that 50, he's never going to see 50% again after this week.
I hope and pray you're right there. I think it's also going to depend on what Mueller comes up with, and it's going to depend a lot on the economy.
Well, let me ask in the last 4 minutes here, with 2 minutes of which we can use, that all over the social media and television right now is that there's going to be no big reveal. All of us that have been pounding the desk here and on
microphone. We already have a reveal.
That's it.
And the reveal was in the indictments of those 12 Russian espionage agents. What happened was they stole the database, 120 million voters, from the Democratic National Committee. They used it for their social media shenanigans. There's indication they turned it over to the Trump campaign. We do not know to the extent to which the Trump people colluded with them. That's all up in the air. So if Mueller reports that Trump or his key lieutenants were involved, then this could become a huge issue.
I think the key, what I would say, and I think Mike is whether the indictment points directly to Donald Trump as being part of the collusion, because otherwise I think it's pretty much proved. We've only got a couple of minutes left, Mike.
Well, let's talk about our supporters. Let's talk about Democrats of the Red Rocks and their fine support. Let's talk about Klaus Van Stenheim and his one support, his great support.
Shall we practice that for a minute?
How are you going to do the candidate from South Bend, the mayor, Pete, or whatever?
No, we're not going to. We're going to roll on to our other wonderful supporters. We want to thank Silent Gary here as a supporter.
And ourselves.
We want to remind them, we want to remind everyone that the Democrats of the Red Rocks fine breakfasts on the third Thursday of every month at the Old Sedona Bar and Grill.
We have a snow day on that this month, folks.
That's true. That's pretty wimpy for Democrats in Sedona, but we're going to forgive them because lots of people wimped out. We do have next month, we have the outlaw Dirty Money guy, a favorite of ours, Terry Goddard, been on the show many times. Three-time mayor of Phoenix is going to be in Sedona talking about our campaign, our version, Arizona's version of campaign finance reform in Sedona on March 21st, and so you may want to be there.
And we have three guests coming in March and early April that are going to discuss foreign affairs in both in the Middle East, two of them in the Middle East and one in South East Asia.
We do have some great shows coming up, and we want to remind you that you can get these shows and all our shows on VVID or Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org. We have a wonderful webpage. Please go there to find our podcasts. And please tune in international, worldwide. You can catch Democratic Perspective, 8:15 every Monday morning.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.